is for what's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Hundreds of civilians were able to leave the rebel enclave of eastern Aleppo Sunday, despite the burning of several buses intended for people trying to leave two towns besieged by rebel forces in northwest Syria. The evacuations began Thursday following an agreement between Russia and Turkey calling on the Syrian government to allow those who wish to leave to do so after Damascus overran the rebel stronghold. Stephen Zunis is a Middle East analyst at University of San Francisco.
The situation remains unclear, and it's really imperative that some kind of international observers are able to get there and to sort things out or at least be witnesses so that it might deter future atrocities and facilitate the evacuation of civilians.
At the UN Security Council, members are to vote Monday on a French-drafted resolution to deploy UN observers to Aleppo. Samantha Powers, the U.S. UN ambassador.
The text contains all of the elements for safe, secure, dignified evacuation, for humanitarian access into those who choose to remain in eastern Aleppo, and a real emphasis on protection, which is all of what has been missing in Syria throughout the life of this conflict.
Russia had threatened earlier to veto the measure, but further consultations produced an apparent compromise. The mandate of President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of Congo expires Monday. Security forces reportedly patrol the streets of the capital, Kinshasa, after the ruling party and opposition failed to end the country's political impasse of succession and future elections. There are concerns over mass protests. The opposition accuses Mr. Kabila, who's been in office since 2001, of clinging to power. He is barred by the country's constitution from seeking a third term. This is VOA News. Hundreds of electors are to cast their ballots Monday for the 45th U.S. president following the November 8 election. New York businessman Donald Trump is widely expected to emerge as the country's next leader. The 538 electors from 50 states and the District of Columbia, the so-called Electoral College, will cast their votes based on the outcome of the election in each state. University of Virginia political science professor Larry Sabato said while Democrat Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, Mr. Trump will be the next chief executive.
You can't say for sure that he'll get the 306 votes that were allocated to him, and you can't say that Hillary Clinton will get the 232 she was allocated. There will probably be some faithless electors, that is, electors who don't vote the way their state voted. But precisely how many, it's impossible to say, but there won't be nearly enough to overturn Trump's victory.
Only one Republican elector in the southwestern state of Texas said he would not vote for Mr. Trump. Jordanian security forces Sunday killed four gunmen in the popular southern tourist city of Karak after killing 10 people, including a Canadian woman, two civilians, and seven policemen. Nearly 30 others were wounded. The attackers' identities or affiliation were not immediately released. China says it will hand back an underwater U.S. drone to the U.S. that it seized in international waters of the South China Sea last week, even though President-elect Donald Trump said Beijing should keep it. Chinese naval forces seized the unmanned submersible while it was collecting unclassified scientific data Thursday. Hawaii-based Pacific Forum security analyst Brad Glosserman said there are two reasons for China's move.
The first is the long-standing Chinese complaint that they do not like these activities, American reconnaissance and research activities that occur in even in international waters, because they feel as though that the United States is preparing for underwater warfare and that it would offer them an advantage in the event of a conflict.
The other, he said, is China sending a message to President-elect Trump that it's unhappy with his recent moves, including taking a congratulatory election phone call from Taiwan's leader. The head of the UN nuclear agency, Yukiya Amano, is in Tehran for the second time since last year's international nuclear agreement with Iran. He met the country's nuclear chief to discuss Tehran's implementation. At least three fighters loyal to Libya's eastern government were killed, several wounded Sunday in a jihadist suicide bombing in Benghazi. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. Hungarian-born Hollywood actress Zsa-Zsa Gabor has died at age 99. The apparent cause was a heart attack. She appeared in more than 30 films, among her most memorable movies, Moulin Rouge, Lily, Touch of Evil, and Arrivederci Baby. Longtime Hollywood actress Zsa-Zsa Gabor dead at age 99. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today could be a decisive day in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Congolese knows that Mr. Kabila's 5-year term is ending up on Monday, December 19th. And the people of Congo, we know what to do.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement. Opposition parties and civil society groups in Sudan have called for a second general strike today, Monday. And Gambians in Senegal protest as pressure mounts for Yahya Jammeh to respect the results of the December 1st poll.
To show our support to the Gambian people who have made their decision the 1st of December, what they have decided through the ballot box should be respected by Jammeh, and urge all head of states in West Africa to also support the Gambian people.
A Gambian protester in Senegal, Ivory Coast, awaits a result from Sunday's parliamentary election boycotted by the main opposition. And Oxford University Press launches a free online Swahili dictionary. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, today, Monday, is the day that the leading coalition of opposition parties, known as the Rassemblement, says President Joseph Kabila must step down because December 19 marks the end of his second 5-year term as mandated by the Constitution. Mr. Kabila's government signed an agreement with a coalition of smaller opposition parties to move the presidential election scheduled for this year to April next year. Talks mediated by the Roman Catholic Church to seek a peaceful resolution are due to resume on Wednesday after they were suspended. Martin Fayulu, a member of the Rassemblement, says the opposition recognizes the mediation of the church, but that the December 19 is non-negotiable.
For the Rassemblement, this is the end of Mr. Kabila's 5-year term, and there is nothing else. And the people of Congo, we know what to do. Our constitution has given to us a duty in Article 64. The duty is each Congolese has to refrain anybody who wants to exercise the power violating the constitution.
But the president has shown no sign that he's going to step down. What happens if he does not?
If he does not, who will tell the Congolese not to follow him because he's not anymore at that position? Will tell the international community not to hear from him, but that's it.
The church had gotten involved. Is your demand in line with what the church wants?
Yes, we continue to tell the church members to continue the mediation. We agree with that mediation, but we are saying on 19, Mr. Kabila is not longer in that position. If we restart discussion on Wednesday, we will discuss as all of us in the same position. The guy is not anymore at the position he was before Wednesday.
But Mr. Fayulu, I thought the talks for a peaceful resolution was supposed to be held on Wednesday. Are you willing to wait for Wednesday?
It's not a matter of waiting. Congolese knows that Mr. Kabila's 5-year term is ending up on Monday, December 19th. This is known. And now the bishop, they say that, okay, let us resume the negotiation on Wednesday, the 21st. We'll be there for the 21st, but we'll be there having in our mind that Mr. Kabila is a citizen as anybody. That his terms has finished.
So, Mr. Fayulu, you said that the Rassemblement wants the Congolese people to carry out their duty with respect to December 19. Are you not concerned that this will bring about some violence?
No, there is no violence from the people of Congo. The violence is from the government. They have put militaries, policemen everywhere. Every town now, when I'm saying here, every town is full of policemen and militaries. And the question that we are asking, why when Beni is attacked, when Goma is attacked, we are not seeing those police cars, military cars, and those guys. Why we are not seeing them? The military is normally supposed to protect the Congolese. And we are saying that the constitution is there. The president is elected by the Congolese. And for 5 years, renewable once. And on Monday 19th, Mr. Kabila has to leave power. But he doesn't want. Now, he want to face Congolese or what? This is the question we are asking.
Mr. Fayulu, it's always nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Opposition parties and civil society groups in Sudan have called for a second general strike today, Monday, to protest the government's decision last month to increase fuel and electricity prices. Meanwhile, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights has condemned the arrest of several Sudanese human rights defenders arrested for protesting and has called for their release. Mariam Al-Mahdi, the first woman vice president of the main opposition National Umma Party, says the protests are an indication that Sudanese are fed up with the government of President Omar al-Bashir.
In Sudan, things now are coming to clarity. The people of Sudan are taking the initiative to besiege and to ruin this dictator regime, this corrupt failed regime, failed to provide for security, failed to provide for livelihood of the people, failed to provide for the unity and the sovereignty of Sudan. So the different groups of youth and activists through the social media have been calling for civil disobedience. They have succeeded in a very marked way for effecting the first civil disobedience in November. And they are now organizing for the second civil disobedience, which will start on the 19th of December, the day of declaration of our independence.
Madam, the African Union Commission on Human and People's Rights is calling on the Sudanese government to release some of the activists that have been arrested. What is your feeling on that?
Well, this is the least they must do. We have vast groups of political leaders and activists who have been detained since the very early days of last November. And all that was because they have declared their objection to the nonsensical economic arrangements declared by the government, though it was supposed to be done by a government which should implement the so-called output of the national dialogue. Now this nonsensical national dialogue is totally put into end because there is total breakdown in the basic freedoms, freedom of movement, freedom of gathering, freedom of expression. To the extent, as you just said, there have been a big group of political leaders and political activists, especially from Sudan Call, from the Sudan Congress Party. And in the last 3 days, all the youth in different parts of Sudan are being detained and being hijacked by the National Intelligence Security Service. Yes.
Madam, the ruling National Congress Party has approved the constitutional amendments that were recommended by the National Dialogue. So is this an improvement in governing in Sudan?
No, the whole issue National Dialogue is now it's a dead process, as the National Congress have effective policies and measurements that actually ended 70% of the recommendations of the National Dialogue. The National Dialogue now is only a mix of positions. I wouldn't say power, because the power now is all concentrated with Field Marshal Omar al-Bashir.
Mariam Al-Mahdi is the first woman vice president of the main opposition National Umma Party. She was speaking with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Today is Monday, December 19th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. International pressure continues to mount on Gambian President Yahya Jammeh to respect the results of the December 1st presidential election. UN Security Council members are expected to receive a closed-door briefing on the Gambia today, Monday, from the Department of Political Affairs. They will be briefed on the outcome of the ECOWAS meeting. Meanwhile, at least four international civil society and human rights bodies in Dakar, along with Gambians living in Senegal, have called on the Gambian president, Yahya Jammeh, to respect the expressed will of the Gambian people after he was voted out. At a protest march in Senegal's capital, Dakar, the protesters have called on Jammeh to step down and hand over power. From Dakar, Sine M.K. Marina reports.
Protesters, mainly Gambians living in exile in Senegal, chanted in local Olof dialect, Jammeh must go. Sidi Gassama is the Amnesty International Senegal director and one of the lead organizers of the protest. He called on Jammeh to respect the will of Gambian people, adding that having him to hang onto power will kill democracy in the region.
To show our support to the Gambian people who have made their decision the 1st of December, what they have decided through the ballot box should be respected by Jammeh, and urge all head of states in West Africa to also support the Gambian people.
Yahya Jammeh rejected this vote and said he's not going to step down. What implication will this have on democracy in the Gambia and the region?
I think if he succeeded, then we should bury democracy in Africa, not only in the Gambia, but in all the African region. No more democracy. Every head of state could lose the election, reject the result, and remain in power.
Fatou Diagne Sengo, the West Africa director of Riot Group Article 19, called on Gambians to stay united and on the new government to have a transition based on truth and inclusiveness.
To stay calm as they're doing, but forceful and be very strong, but also to stay united, because what is important in this election, it's not an election of one party, it's an election for Gambia, for a new Gambia. A Gambia that embraces all his sons and daughters. A Gambia that could, integrate its diaspora. A Gambia that integrates the youth. Youth have indicated their support for change. And that we must see also that, in the country, we want to see the implication of the youth, the women, in this transition to strengthen peace. What we are calling for this new leadership to do, to consider all those sectors and be an inclusive transition, a transition that is appeased, a transition that is fair, a transition that is based on truth. If you have truth, then people can move on, people can know that there are things that have happened in the past that will never happen again.
Among the protesters are former Gambian soldiers who fled to Dakar after falling out with Jammeh regime. Captain Wassa Kamara spent 9 years in jail for his role in a 2006 coup attempt. He fled to Senegal after being pardoned by President Jammeh, and he is now mounting pressure on him to give power.
It is very important for the outgoing president to realize that Gambians have spoken, and the choice that they have made on selecting or voting for Adama Barrow has to be respected, because it's a constitutional mandate that when election period is over and then the IEC chairman has announced the candidate who has won the election, that candidate should be given all the due respect by the outgoing president to hand over in peace.
Meanwhile, ECOWAS leaders meeting in the Nigerian capital Abuja on the Gambian crisis agreed that Jammeh must step down after his term expired on January 17 and refrain from any action likely to compromise the transition and peaceful transfer of power. ECOWAS leaders vow to take all necessary action to enforce the result of the December 1st and protect President-elect Adama Barrow. Reporting for VOA Daybreak, I am Seni M.K. Marina in Dakar.
Results from Sunday's parliamentary election in Ivory Coast are expected later today, Monday. President Alassane Ouattara hopes a decisive victory will strengthen his ruling coalition's majority in parliament. But the opposition Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo, which has boycotted elections for the past 5 years, again did not take part in the parliamentary vote. Jean-Gervais Tchéidé, vice president in charge of finance and budget for the Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the election does not represent true democracy in Ivory Coast because the government refused to make fundamental changes, including appointing a new elections commission.
No, we didn't take part to that election. We asked the government to change the conditions of the election so that there can be real democratic elections. That is what we have been asking for the last 5 years. But as usual, Mr. Ouattara's government refused to listen to us. They preferred to go to that election with some parties and a majority of independent candidates. So we are not concerned by these elections.
Is that an indication that the Ivorian Popular Front Party is split? Because if I understand what you're saying, one group from the party is taking part in the election.
We cannot say one group, but that gentleman called Mr. Afi, who used to be the president of the party, has been dismissed from the party, but he still messes around with the government. And the government has chosen him as the legal leader of the party. This is a problem that we know, I think. And we, as members of the party, faithful to the president, Mr. Gbagbo, we consider that we are not concerned by these elections. But some people claiming that they are from our party, that we don't recognize, have taken part to those elections. And we are waiting for the result.
The way I understand it is that perhaps this gentleman you're talking about, who you say is picked by the president, by him taking part, he will bring about, say, diversification. That means your party will be represented in parliament.
No. If that happens, that they have some candidates who are elected, we consider that they are not representing us. They represent themselves. They represent that gentleman who is in connection with the government. For us, democracy is still to come. And from now on, we'll be fighting to have real democratic conditions for elections so that the country can have a real parliament and a real government who is really democratic.
So what do you expect will be the results? Do you think the turnout was good or what?
We have called the people to stay at home, to not participate. So we have an eye on the rate of participation so that we can know whether the people, the electors, are still listening to the Ivorian Popular Front, because we had a good result in that position for the presidential election, for the referendum, for the constitution, and we are trying to show to that power that, in fact, even if we don't go to the elections, we are the ones that the people listen to in this country.
Your party has been boycotting elections in Ivory Coast for some time now. Are you not leaving the country up to President Alassane Ouattara and his party? Are you not washing your hands of ruling the country?
No, we are not washing our hands from ruling the country. We are on the contrary, we are preparing to be a good alternative for the country. Because, you know, compromise is something possible, but bad compromise will follow you all the time. We still hope that we will manage to bring what we call democracy.
Mr. Tchéidé, it's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, my friend.
Jean-Gervais Tchéidé is vice president in charge of finance and budget for the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abidjan. In 2015, Oxford Dictionaries launched a new digital global languages program with a mission to extend learning and education worldwide. Rael Ombuor reports from Nairobi on the launch of the first online Swahili dictionary by the Oxford University Press.
The objective of the Oxford Global Languages Initiative is to transform the experience of people worldwide by making content in different languages available in a digital platform, on websites, in apps, and in many different tools and services. In a video message delivered Wednesday at the launch of its online Swahili dictionary, Oxford Dictionary's director Judy Purcell said one reason for putting together the Swahili versions is to help connect cultures across Africa.
Because Swahili is an extremely important language across large parts of southeastern and eastern parts of Africa, and it's spoken by millions of people, both as a mother tongue, but also as a second language, and very much a lingua franca across large parts of the country. So bridging those smaller languages and connecting cultures.
For the first time, large quantities of quality lexical information from Swahili have been systematically created, collected, and made available in a single linked repository to speakers, learners, and developers.
That was Rael Ombuo reporting for Nairobi, Kenya. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning. We begin with the 2016 CAF Beach Soccer Africa Cup of Nations, as Senegal have been crowned champions for the fourth time after defeating host Nigeria 8-4 in Sunday's final at the Echo Atlantic Beach, Lagos. The win is also Senegal's fourth straight win against the Sun Eagles of Nigeria. Both teams, however, have qualified to represent the continent at the World Cup Championships holding in Bahamas in 2017. It will be Nigeria's third World Cup appearance after defeat at the tournaments in Brazil and Italy. Senegal will be making their fifth World Cup outing after they reached the last eight in 2007 and 2011. Elsewhere, Mr. Philip Chiangwa has been elected as president of the Council of Southern Africa Football Associations, COSAFA, after he stood unopposed at the organization's annual general meeting at Sun City, South Africa on Saturday. The Zimbabwe Football Association president takes over from Suketu Patel, who chose not to stand after completing two terms in office. The other contender for the role of COSAFA president, Danny Jordan from South Africa, withdrew from the vote. Nigeria's sports minister, Solomon Dalong, has come out to blame the Nigerian Football Federation over the disgraceful episode concerning the late payment of the Super Falcons' bonuses and allowances after they won the Women's African Cup of Nations in Cameroon. The minister suggested that the NFF submitted a budget for the African Women's Cup of Nations in Cameroon late, and so the problems that saw the Falcons back on a well-publicized protest to press for their entitlements. The minister equally wondered how the NFF got the funds to stage an annual general assembly but could not pay the Falcons. Nigeria's sports minister Solomon Dalong has also ordered an audit of the finances of the Nigerian Football Federation after the World Football Governing Body FIFA suspended any grants to the FA until they properly account for the $1.1 million that have been paid to them. As the African Cup of Nations draws closer, many countries are beginning to step up their preparations. The Black Stars will be heading to Dubai for their preparations ahead of the African Cup of Nations to be staged in Gabon next year. The Stars finished second in Equatorial Guinea and will be landing in Gabon, seeking to end a 35-year-old wait for the trophy they have won on four occasions in the past. For Uganda, the Ugandan Cranes Group D opponents at the 2017 African Cup of Nations, Mali, have lined up a friendly against Burkina Faso. The two West African nations are expected to face off in Morocco on Saturday, January the 7th, 7 days prior to the kickoff of the tournament in Gabon. Mali, coached by Frenchman Alain Grisé, have been drawn in Group D, where they will face 1978 finalist Uganda, Ghana, and Egypt. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I'm Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's over to you in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good week.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.